Hi, I'm Jonathan Wood, creator of Bleak the Rechargeable Dog, and you are watching Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to cartoonist Nate Fakes, creator of the syndicated single-panel daily comic strip, Break of Day. Stick around, but don't make any funny moves. Nate needs an idea for tomorrow's strip, and he's looking right at you. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of wannabe cartoonists who all got rejected by newspaper syndicates for being unable to draw or write funny gags day after day after day after day in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Nate Fakes. With a name like that, he's pretty much got to be funny, right? Fakes is the creator of Break of Day, a syndicated, single-panel daily comic strip in the mode of, let's say The Far Side or Bizarro. And as are most successful newspaper comics, it's drawn in a style that is instantly recognizable and has a voice that is all fake. I mean Fakes. 365 days a year, Fakes has to come up with a fresh gag that will evoke a smile, a chuckle, a belly laugh, or even a declaration of, that's what I'm talking about. And I imagine there are days when it's easy, when inspiration comes from all around. And then there are probably days when his job seems like the worst possible way to earn a living the world could imagine. An impossible task with no daylight ahead. Now, complicating the work of the single-panel cartoonist is the lack of ongoing characters or storyline. Unlike Rat and Pig in Pearls Before Swine, for example, Fakes can't unfold a story over the course of a week, can't demonstrate the same kind of character development, or even stick with a single character. And maybe that's why he's broadening his palette at the moment with an in-development graphic novel for young people, mostly, called Don Giovanni. Oh, and here's one more thing you should know about Nate Fakes. He's based right here in the new media capital of the world. I love saying that. St. Petersburg, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nate Fakes, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah, glad to have you here. I got to say, though, I'm kind of rethinking that introduction a little bit. I'm thinking that maybe I overstated the challenge of your job. After all, you are based here in Florida where, insanity is all around us.
Yeah, St. Petersburg, it makes it pretty easy to do my work most of the time. I just walk out, downtown and around the streets, and there you have it, an idea, half the time.
So tell me about the other half time. How do you sustain it? It's a lot of comics.
Yeah, the other half of the time is just sitting on the couch scratching my head, and that goes on for hours. And nothing comes out of it usually, but sometimes I'll get lucky. Just depends.
And how long have you been doing the strip?
You know what? It started off in college back in 2002. Hmm. But back then it was markers and it looked pretty crappy. I don't even want to go back to that time. So technically 3 years to where it actually got good and was kind of in the papers and stuff.
Hmm. How long you been? You're in TBT here in Tampa Bay. You're carried in TBT, which is the 5 days a week paper put out by the Tampa Bay Times. How long have you been in there?
The 2-year anniversary is on May 2nd.
Cool.
And the funny thing about that, if you get a chance, check out the debut issue, because it's the same day that Osama bin Laden got killed. So my character, a Penguin character, they took out of my comic and they put it on the front page with Osama bin Laden. And it says something like, just been killed or captured. And it looks like the Penguin got killed or captured on it. His debut new comics. It was me and who else? But yeah, it's a interesting cover to have.
Nice way to debut, I guess.
It really was. Yeah, it was a popular issue. I'm guessing it was popular not because of my comic, but you know.
Oh, come on! I'm sure it was entirely the comic.
The Penguin might have sold quite a few of them. I don't know, or you know, got a few issues out there.
Could be. Maybe. Could be.
I like to think that's probably what it was.
So I described at the top how difficult it can be, and you kind of mentioned, you know, to come up with that strip, that gag idea almost every day. Well, every day for, you know, why be a cartoonist? Why not just? I know you do some commercial illustration and other things, but now this has got to be a very frustrating line of work at times.
Yeah, I have no idea why anyone would want to go in this profession. To be honest. Yeah. It's a constant headache. It's constant frustration. At the end of the day, I guess I have to say it's worth it. But it is tough. I mean, you know, it's just one of the, you know, I was a kid just drawing silly papers, pictures my whole life. I did horrible making good grades in school. I was known for just drawing. And so I got a little bit of attention that way. I'm like, well, no. Maybe there's a career in this, ever since I had a box of crayons, I've been drawing, and that's kind of where I am today.
Do you remember the first thing you drew that got a laugh?
My biggest claim to fame was I drew the cover of the elementary school yearbook in fifth grade. I got paid $5 for it, too, so I was like, I think that's what really got the ball rolling. It's like, wow, I made $5 off that. You know, I went and bought some candy or something, I think. And then, yeah, people laughed at it. They liked it. And I was kind of like, for one day or so, I was kind of like the kid around school. Whoa, you drew that cover for the year. That was me. And so, yeah, that was probably like the biggest thing that got to laugh.
So you're still trying to make your middle school friends laugh even today?
Yeah, to this day. I don't know if it's working or not. I've lost contact with quite a few of them, but you know.
Are you you're here in St. Pete? Did you grow up here? Did you land here? Why St. Pete?
I'm not from St. Petersburg. I've been here 5 years. I'm originally from Ohio. I've lived all over the place. So I actually lived in Kansas for a little bit. I've lived in New Jersey, New York, and Florida, and I came here because I was in Ohio, and with all the cloud and rain and everything else, a buddy of mine, we just decided one day just to kind of pack up and come down on a whim, so I did, and it's been 7 years now. I moved to Bradenton first, and then St. Pete, like I said, 5 years ago, but nice. Yeah, I love here. I love downtown. If you haven't been to downtown St. Petersburg, I think it's probably best small city, definitely in Florida. I don't know about the world, but it's a great place. It's fun.
Yeah, it's a city. It's not quite a big city, but it's a city where it's big enough, and yet you can, you know, kind of get to know pretty much everybody at some point, and you start realizing that people are crossing your path. So, you know, it's just a small town, big city, sort of medium city, let's say.
Yeah, that's what's cool about it. You walk downtown, you always run into somebody you know a lot of times.
Now, like, do you ever sketch? Do you ever go to like a coffee shop or somewhere in town and sketch? Do people know you as, oh yeah, it's that cartoonist always hanging out here, trying to see wait for us to do something funny?
No, I always think about doing that. Like, I think I'd enjoy it. I just don't. I used to go to the USF, the Starbucks over there, the bookstore, every morning. Because for the cheap coffee, you take your own cup and get a refill for 99 cents, so I couldn't beat that. So when I lived over on that side of town, I always went there. And sometimes I'd sit in there and come up with ideas. I never really, like, drew anything in there and stuff, and they didn't know me for that. A few people knew, like, what I did, but, yeah, I was never, like, a big regular that everyone kind of waited, knew about or anything. So,
well, so tell folks a little about Break a Day. Let's say that there's some particular, there may be some newspaper editors who are watching us here and they're curious and they're not familiar with the panel. Tell folks a little bit about what it is you're aiming to do every day in there, and then maybe at some point while we're talking, if you want to pick up your pad, I know you've got it handy there. If you want to talk and sketch a little bit, we'd be happy to see you do a little work as well.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, newspaper editors everywhere. You definitely want Break a Day in your newspaper. I mean, I try to do some, it's, well, let me start with this. Like, when you're a gag cartoonist, just about every issue, topic, everything has almost been done already. Like, you kind of, you want to Google everything and make, you try to do something unique, original, hasn't been done before. But unbeknownst to every gag cartoonist out there, it's going to happen sometime. They're going to do an idea, and someone will get your attention like, oh, that was in the Far Side back in 1982. Like, okay, well, I didn't see that one, sorry. But, yeah, so I always try to just, I'm trying to do, like, just every unique, silly concepts. I do a lot of it deals with modern technology, like cell phones, the internet, and all that stuff. I put a lot of animals in my work also, and I try to, they're kind of a lot of times in adult situations or kind of human situations that animals don't do, like sitting in a living room chatting, drinking coffee, or like that. You wouldn't see that in nature, obviously. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of awful puns, but you know, my main goal with it is just, if I think it's amusing and funny, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get done. If I think it's stupid, I won't. Sometimes I'll be on the edge about something and I'll put it out there and I'll think, oh gosh, I'll cringe like the day it's out and think, and you know, it's funny because like a lot of stuff I'll hate, just, I'll get a bunch of comments on my syndicate site and be like, oh, I love this one, it's great. And then they'll share it on their Facebook. And, wow, that one? Okay.
Now, you've had some good shares from what I understand. Some interesting people have grabbed your work and shared it online.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, out of all the stuff I'm kind of known for more than anything else, being shared across, like, Facebook and the internet, George Takei kind of set the bar for that. He shares quite a few comics. I don't know exactly how many. I know of four that I know of that he has. I think he's got, like, 4 million fans on his Facebook, so, like, if he puts one out there, it makes the rounds everywhere, and then I get people telling me, hey, I saw your comic in, like, weirdest places, it'll show up. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I've only got a penny for each time that was shared.
Oh, yeah.
Multi-millionaire by now.
That would be great.
Oh, well.
Well, why don't you show us some work a little bit? Why don't you grab your pad, if you can?
Not a problem. I'm going to tilt down the camera so you guys can see it.
Okay.
I think that might be good.
Yeah, that's fine.
Do you have anything you want me to draw? I have nothing in mind, so anything is fine.
Whatever you think. I know you do a lot of animals. If you want to do, that would be good.
All right. Tell you what. Well, here's what I start off doing. I always use a pencil first.
Okay.
In a second, with this day of digital everything, I'm still very old school. I use bristle pads, paper for mm-hmm. all my work. Let me just start off here. Let's do a quick dog.
So for people who don't know, they see you drawing on a Bristol board there. Do you draw the borders on your own panels, or are they?
Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask, are they, you know, do you get the boards already, you know, with panels on them, or do you, you know, how much from scratch do you work on a single day panel?
Everything is pretty much from scratch. Actually, the paper that my work comes in is a huge sheet. I don't have any examples right next to me. It's not this size of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go to Kinko's and cut them all down. The Break a Day cartoons are 5.5 by 5.5 originally, and I draw those panels out. I actually use India ink for those, and it's all hand-drawn, everything on them. Which I like. I've tried the whole digital thing, and I'm just not into it. The only thing I do digitally, which you can probably tell from my work, is the coloring.
Hmm.
So, but this is what I use. Old school dip pen and ink. It's India ink. It's stuff you don't want to spill on your T-shirts.
use a particular size of nib on that pen?
Yeah, it's a 513 EF is what it's called from Hunt. Is the name of the company, H-U-N-T?
All right.
Or is it Speedball? I've been doing it for so long. Speedball or Hunt, one of the two companies. All I forget. Right.
Well, for all the cartoonist geeks, we're trying to get the specifics there for you. just kidding. And what about, I mean, do you have any schooling for cartooning, for drawing? Did you, after high school, did you study this? Have you just kind of developed it on your own?
It's pretty much on my own. I went to Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, and I took a lot of art classes, and that helped with the whole coloring aspect. With drawing, though, I've just kind of been doing it on my own. Obviously, I look at other artists I like and stuff, and you have to excuse me. I just had my morning coffee, so this is a little...
It's all right.
But, I've looked at other artists. I've taken a lot off of what other people have done, and I think that's what every good cartoonist does, is they look at people they like and then, not copy it, but take some their techniques and their skills and stuff and apply it to myself here as much as I can.
It's interesting.
But I think the dip pen, pretty much my whole, professional career, but like I mentioned, back in college, I used to use a lot of markers and stuff like that. I tried a few different things, and then toward the end of being in the school newspaper, I started using the dip pen.
It's been very old school.
It really is, but I love the look of it, and I think it's a way to get real expressive with the lines, and I think it reflects in the work too. Anything digital doesn't really have the same kind of look and feel to it, in my opinion. Like a lot of people stuff does, but
well, some people are very good at it. I mean, Chris Brown, who does Hagar the Horrible, loves his Wacom. And does a great job with it. I can't even tell anymore. I mean, he's just gotten so comfortable with it. But I'm watching you work, and I'm thinking back in high school and college, learning to use a pen like you have there with the India ink. I mean, and typical of people who do not become cartoonists, you get too much ink on the pen. You put it down on the paper, and you hold it still too long, and you get a big blob of ink and it's a mess. I'm watching you, and you're not having any of those issues. So obviously, you know what you're doing with a pen in your hand.
I hope so. Sometimes I know what I'm doing, but yeah, it's it can be frustrating though. I'm telling you, after all these years, there's still sometimes that is the ink doesn't always cooperate with you, or else the paper doesn't, and it's like it is frustrating at times. You're just like, what the heck? You rip it up and throw it, which I've done a few times.
And let me ask you this. Why did you, when you decided to do a strip and pursue, kind of daily comics, why do a panel and not a continuity strip of some kind?
Honestly, I kind of did it for for a few reasons. One, I found myself, I guess, good at it. At least I like to think I am at, on most of them. And two is with the panels, I've found other markets beyond newspapers and stuff, because as we all know, right now, newspapers are they're not exactly thriving. And by the time I actually got to the point where it was my stuff was somewhat good enough to get out there in newspapers and everything, is when the big decline hit. And growing up, I never thought that would happen. I always just wanted to be in newspapers, and that was all. So with panels, I'm also in greeting card companies and stuff like that. I can take break of day material or strips comics I don't use for the feature and send them off to greeting card companies or other markets, and they'll pick them up. With a strip, if you have a cast of characters and everything, there's basically only one avenue for them, and that's to have a feature, I mean, for the most part. And so there's only one place, really. That's newspapers or online, or you can't really get those off to other markets. So that was kind of a big reason right there. I mean, just in terms of the broad perspective of how where these can go to if, beyond just the feature.
So how many greeting cards will you sell in a year?
They don't give me the numbers. I get a royalty check from a couple companies. I'm in the company Smart Alex. I have a few in there, some birthday cards and a bachelorette card, which I think is doing pretty good. And then the company NovaWorks, I have some holiday cards in there.
Well, what I meant was how many concepts I get. I guess that's what. How many concepts a year will you sell to the greeting card companies?
Oh, how many? Not many.
Okay.
I pitch a lot of material to them, but yeah, it's not too many of them get picked up, unfortunately.
Okay. That's a tough market. Terry Liebson, she does pajama diaries. Why can't I think of Terry Liebson? I think Terry Liebson. I think that's her name. Yeah. She's been on the show. That's her full-time job, is she does greeting card design.
I just noticed that today, actually. I just added her on my LinkedIn account, and I saw that. She was, full-time greeting cards, and she does pajama diaries, too. I've known of her trip, but I didn't know she was just – she did that full-time.
Yeah, I guess she was doing the greeting cards when the strip started breaking out, and she – I'm still got her day job. Folks, I think we can see pretty clearly it's a dog. It almost looks like a Simpsons dog.
I get that sometimes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, a little bit of Matt Groening there.
Yeah, I have – my characters tend to have somewhat kind of bigger eyes, and that is true. If you look at Break of Day, there's a little bit of influence of Simpsons in it. But, that's kind of your typical dog of mine.
Cute.
Doing nothing there, but.
Oh, very cool. Well, thank you. All right, well, why don't you tilt up back up? We'll take another look at you. And I got to tell you, the other thing I was thinking is, yes, we should, maybe just tilt the screen just a little bit back toward you so we get you. There you go. That should be good.
Okay.
A little technical adjustment, folks. You were here. I was thinking that it seems like there should be a separate Ruben for the gag panel guys and the continuity strips, you know, because what you guys do, I think, is so different. From what, like, you know, Pastis or Tatuli or, you know, Chris Brown, for example. It's so different. It's such a different mindset, I think, to create a different gag every day, different characters. Maybe it's inanimate objects. Maybe it's people. Maybe it's who knows, you know? It just seems like it's a different – you're all cartoonists, but it's just it shouldn't be competitive between the two.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that either. That would be okay with me. Yeah, with the – Rubens, too, like, one thing I'm noticing, I don't know how true, like, I guess it is, I've noticed it, and I think it is kind of going down this path, but I don't know, I'm guessing it will definitely get changed, but it's like, there's really no syndicate's buying new cartoons, and it seems like it's just the same people kind of year-round with the category of comic strip and gag panels, and because, honestly, I don't know if I have a chance with, you know, I can only do so much with... I'm syndicated online, but beyond that. So I'm wondering, like, if that's ever going to change to where, like, if people – I mean, not only me, obviously, but there's a lot of people out there that just don't really have the opportunity to be in a lot of newspapers and stuff. And it's, like, different names would be to get out there and for the big categories, you know?
I agree, yeah. It just seems like – how can you compare Break of Day to, I don't know, Baby Blues, for example? I know Rick Kirkman, who's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks – does Baby Blues. I mean, it's a very different type of work. I mean, you just can't – it's apples and oranges. So, you know, and so when was the last time a daily gag comic won the Ruben? I don't know. I can't think of one. Farside? Has Dan Ferraro won for Bizarro? I don't know.
You know, I think – yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think Speed Bump was either he won or he might have been up for it, Dave Coverley. And I think Bizarro, I really don't know. I know they've been nominated, I believe, and I'm just not too sure on that, who the ever won or not.
So do you, as many of these as you do in a year, how often do you feel like you've really nailed it, and how many times would you like to have a do-over?
good question. Good question. Do-overs, I say I nail it. Like, when I actually put it on pen and paper, like, when I'm doing – when it's to that point, I feel pretty good about it. So about 95% of those I'll use. Sometimes I'll do them and then, you know, ink them and color them, and I look at them like, it's just not good. So I'd say probably about 5% of them end up in the trash bin, but most of them, you know, if I write them and I actually take the time to ink them out and stuff, I'll put them out there. And like I said before, like sometimes the stuff I think is really bad, I'll be amazed at how many people actually like it. So I'm not always the best judge. I do what I think is funny, but sometimes I'll miss the mark on that. So just never know sometimes, you know.
Right.
As long as it's not absolutely horrible. I can usually tell something's like absolutely horribly crappy. So
You're a good judge of your own work, is that what you're saying?
I'm my own worst critic, and yeah, I try to be the best judge of it. And I don't know if I am or not, but I try.
All right. And so let's change gears a little bit. You recently launched, and I don't want to hear a flood from a million Kickstarter campaigns, because I'm going to mention this. I usually steer clear of these things, but we were going to talk about Break of Day anyway. So you've launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to produce a graphic novel that you're calling Don Giovanni. The campaign's still going on. You want to tell folks a little bit about it?
Yeah, I will. It's something I really want to do. I've actually been thinking about it for years of doing this. It started off as a kid, once again, going back to childhood here. I love the movie Amadeus. Something not really about the music, but I like the whole idea that he worked hard and just did as much as he could putting his stuff out there. And from that, I like some of his work too, you know. And one of his operas, Don Giovanni, I'm not a big opera buff either, but I really like the story. I think it's cool, and actually some of the music to it also just I think is really kind of neat. So I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to take that into like a modern day graphic novel, because that's what I do. I draw things. So I thought, you know, but I didn't want to make it obviously like the old opera or anything like that. So I switched it around. I have it taking place in a trailer park, and at a trailer park in Ohio, and the main characters are a bunch of 8-year-olds, mostly. There's a few others. And the adult situations that you see in the opera, I obviously edit them to this age group. But yeah, it's the whole story, except in a different light, with different characters, different language. And it's really, I've got the whole thing, I've got the first 7 pages done, but I got the whole thing pretty much sketched out in my sketchbook, and it turns out really, really good. And for me being my own critic, but I love it. I think people would really like it. So, yeah, I thought the best way I never tried a Kickstarter. I've never done a graphic novel, and I thought the best way to maybe test the waters and get it out there would be a Kickstarter campaign. So,
and how much are you trying to raise through the campaign?
$17,500.
Okay,
which is big chunk of change, and it's because, like I mentioned, it's not even done, and the whole thing is going to be about 200 pages. Plus in full color. That's to get an editor, a proofreader, professionally printed, all that good stuff.
That amount that you're trying to raise, is that simply to pay for your time doing it, or is that supposed to be enough to get it printed?
Part of it is for my time, so I can actually afford to do it.
Right.
Most of it, I mean, actually, I don't know about most of it. With the budget I have, a lot of it's going for the printing and all that, but yeah, a lot of it's for my time, and I'm adding a bunch of incentives in there also. In fact, today, the big incentive that I broke out to everybody was with the funding, I'm also going to produce a small Break of Day book, which will feature 100 of my favorite comics. But I add that to the mix also.
Cool.
And yeah, I base my budget also off of like what other people were doing, and I kind of like saw what they were at and like how much they were looking at. Some people went like way above 17,000, some people went below. I was trying to go higher because I wanted to kind of test, like I said, test the waters to see how much of how much people would really get into it and like it if I could hit the mark. And so,
and when does the campaign expire?
In 2 weeks.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, honestly, it hasn't created quite the buzz I was hoping for by now. And I think Don Giovanni is just a hard sell, because I don't know if it's the name or people just think opera or what it is. It may be the first pages of it too. I put the first 7 pages on there, and it doesn't give away, it doesn't show a lot of what the whole novel is. And it could have been a mistake on my part to do that. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just lousy at Kickstarter campaigns.
It is an art. There is definitely an art to it. I haven't done one. I've steered clear of featuring them because they come and go so fast, and you know, it's hard to it's kind of hard to get a real grasp on any one. So you know, if they're successful and they produce, I usually do it. But hey, we were going to talk anyway, and I knew it was important to you, so I thought we could certainly give it a mention here.
Doesn't hurt. I know. 2 more weeks left. I haven't given up yet.
And what do you think you can do in a graphic novel that you can't do in the daily gag panel?
Well, I really enjoy it. For me, it's new. It's like new territory, and I like the fact I like drawing big. Like I draw, it's 17.5 by 11, the original size of the drawing. Mm-hmm. But this, I don't know. For me, it's just getting more. It's fun to just create the story and kind of take it. See how watch it develop into more and more, and get the characters down. And I envision the done product, like the finished book, and that's what really like motivates me the most. Thinking like having that in my hand, and just thinking how cool that would be to have that. So yeah, it's an area I really want to, if all else fails with the Kickstarter, I'm going to try to take Don Giovanni elsewhere and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But beyond Don Giovanni too, like I'd like to start doing more graphic novels, like other story ideas I have, and it seems to be the kind of the one market too that I don't have the numbers on it, but it seems like a lot of people really enjoy graphic novels. It's not like the newspaper industry or anything that's kind of declining. It seems like a lot of people still buy them, and things can come out of them too. So yeah, it's fun.
worth a shot. I'll be curious to see how the campaign turns out. I know for those of us who've been following you on Facebook, we certainly know that you're very excited about it, and certainly wish you well in doing it.
I hate self-promotion. It's like I cringe every time I post on that Facebook about it. It's like, because I hate bothering. I feel like I'm bothering people. I send out emails, and it's like it's like the PBS.
Hey, you got to do it. Take it from somebody who has to be very self-promotional with Mr. Media. You just some things you just got to do to get it out in front of people.
Exactly. So, you know.
Well, folks, listen. You can find Nate Fake's daily comic strip, Break of Day, in great newspapers such as TBT in the Tampa Bay area. And if you'd like to help him start off his graphic novel, Don Giovanni, go to Kickstarter.com. I'm assuming they can search either your name, Nate Fakes, F-A-K-E-S, or if they can spell it, Don Giovanni.
I would go with the Nate Fakes because I'm the only Fakes out there, I believe. I'm like the last of the Mohicans with that last name. So,
all right.
That's probably the way of doing it. But yeah.
And what about a website where people can find you? Obviously, we mentioned you're on Facebook. Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, Cartoonist Nate. And if you really want to see like a lot of my work, and you can actually like purchase comics for any use you want, go to natefakes.org, and you'll see a lot of stuff there. Do not go to natefakes.com, though, because I've been informed I don't know how many times that's a little you don't want to look. Well, you don't want to know about it.
Now I do.
I'll look at that. Just put my last name, what that can associate to maybe with other things, and I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, for folks who are watching the video, Nate's name and website are down here along the bottom, so you can see it there. And if you're listening on your iPod or something, it is Nate, NateFakes.org. Go there, hire the man. If you're an editor, acquire his strip, all that kind of good stuff. And Nate Fakes, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bob. It's been fun.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media Radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.